You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialized fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Roberts. Just a reminder that if you haven't checked out my Patreon before, this is a really good month for that. If you are enjoying the Frost Fair Affair, because my Patreon subscribers, all of them, even at the $1 a month level, will be receiving the ebook of the Frost Fair Affair ahead of it finishing on this podcast. Also, there is a Patreon $15 special level where you also receive an early copy of the paperback of this issue. There's lots of other cool benefits from joining my Patreon, including lots of books to download and other goodies, some audio exclusives as well. So trot along there and check it out if you get a chance. And in the meantime, this week we have more of The Frost Fair Affair. Chapter 7, Thin Ice. Walking on the ice among the tents and stalls allowed Neem the opportunity to take Mr. Thornbury's arm and speak privately with him. It was an age since they had been anything like alone with each other. "We are going to investigate the printer's tent, aren't we?" she asked him. "Just you and me?" "Of course we are," he replied in a low voice, "unless you'd prefer we arrange for a chaperone." Neem nestled her arm more tightly into his. With the bright lights and flames around them, and so many people, hardly anyone would pay them attention. And Juno and Henry, those most likely to note their absence, not only approved of their match, but had been actively encouraging it. "I suppose you are going to marry me," she said archly. "Name the day." Thornbury sounded entirely earnest, which took Neem's breath away, unless that was the chill from the ice beneath their feet. "I think it vital to inform you, as my future husband, that I expect to be invited on all mysterious midnight adventures," she informed him. Thornbury nodded gravely. "You'll have to invest in a black stocking cap and harlequin mask to ensure discretion. I'll consult my seamstress in the morning." Their group stopped for ices at a stall. Neem was already chilly and would have preferred a hot toddy of some sort, but Henry's friend Figgy made a palaver about new flavours that had to be tasted to be believed. The dishes of ice were handed around. Black tea, punch water, rye bread and muscadine. Neem let the others choose first, which meant that she ended up with parmesan when she would have much preferred royal cream or pineapple. Joke was on everyone. Hers was delicious and frozen into the shape of a mouse, which she found rather amusing. Juno ate a bright red barberry ice, frozen into the shape of an anarchist's bomb. "Start as one means to go on," she said gaily as she licked her spoon. The circus was stationed near the Tethys Bridge, drawing such crowds that Neem swore she could feel the ice creaking under her feet. In any case, what with the dancing bear, the flame jugglers, and the tumbling clowns, it was easy enough to drift aside from their main party. Thornbury's gloved hand was firm and warm around Neem's as he tugged her away from their friends, behind a fortune teller's tent, and into the darkness. They stepped lively along a channel formed by many tents backing up against each other, careful not to trip over pegs and ropes. Actually, how did one secure a tent to the ice? Neem looked down to see, but Thornbury's arm urged her on. He was remarkably cheerful about their mission. Perhaps like her, he was sick of polite society. It felt like they were off on an adventure together, in their own little world. Thornbury kept glancing at Neem to check she was still there beside him, though their arms remained tangled together. Each time, his smile creased up a little more. They paused, some while later, behind the thick slats of a hut, that must have been built very recently. Carpenters, at least, were still finding work during the great frost. "Are we close?" Neem asked. But when Thornbury turned to look at her, the expression on his face left her breathless again. They had kissed before, here and there. They had learned to choose their moments, ducking around chaperones and duchesses and other obstacles. But they had never quite kissed like this before. Thornbury pressed Neem against the back of the hut and captured her with his mouth. No one had ever kissed her like this before. A few shy courtship rituals that came to nothing with gentlemen who had not suited. Thornbury himself had always been so careful with her reputation, knowing that even the occasional moment of alone was an illusion in houses full of other people. They were not alone now. Even as Neem felt the heat of him pressing through the layers of their clothes and the rough scrape of the creaky hut at her back, she could hear chatters and murmurs of the frost fair vendors and patrons. The air was full of flute music and happy shouts. Was it even winter? She had never felt so overdressed in her life. Thornbury's mouth was a revelation, all propriety cast aside. Neem kissed him back, as passionately as she knew how, and learned a few new things into the bargain. Mostly what to do with one's hands at a time like this. Finally, they drew apart. Thornbury remained relentlessly close, his face pressed tenderly into the softest part of her throat. An ache rolled through Neem like a shiver, slow and sensuous. He drew back from her a few seconds later. The spell was broken, and the polite veil of the gentleman fell back over his demeanour. Thornbury opened his mouth to speak. Neem cut him off. "Don't you dare apologise." Her eyes had adjusted enough to this shadowy, makeshift alley that she saw his face crease once more into a smile. Her favourite smile in the world, one that she claimed possession of entirely. "I wouldn't dream of it," said Thornbury, and gave her the kind of familiar caress, a hand to the hip, a brief squeeze that reminded her of how Henry and Juno were together, still newly married and enchanted with each other. "I do think, however," he went on, "we might return to our friends with the news of an engagement rather than an understanding. I suppose it will give me something to write my mother about," Neem said with a mock sigh. "But first, breaking and entering?" "Breaking and entering," he agreed happily, as if she had given him a gift. The printer's tent remained closed, with a lock and chain on the front and a damp sign saying, "Back for business soon," which had clearly survived more than one patter of snow. "Do you know what bulk and file means?" Thornbury asked as the two of them strolled along the ice together, pausing by the glassblower's stand next door. Neem was easily distracted by the beautiful artistry as the glassblower created a gleaming, impossible ball with a hair inside, coloured pale pink and white. She could not sense any use of magic at all, pure craft and technical skill. "That particular phrase wasn't taught at my finishing school," she replied. Thornbury leaned into her, his breath warm on her cheek. "The bulk keeps watch, while the file picks the pocket," he said quietly. "That had better not be your way of telling me to keep watch while you have all the fun." The spellcracker hesitated, and she could see he was torn. "Wait 5 minutes, then join me around the back," he decided finally, and squeezed her arm one more time before hurrying away, apparently in the opposite direction. Neem waited, watching the glassblower swirl a galaxy of snowflakes inside a bauble. His stall was scattered with printed labels that read, "Made on the ice," ready to be attached to the new pretties. Perhaps on another day, she could return and purchase a gift for her mamma, something suitably grand, to suggest that while Neame was never going to marry a duke or anyone who might qualify for the Court of Lords some day, she could still give Mrs. Galatea Seaborn something to brag about at parties. Neame moved on, joining the crowd past the next few stalls. She stepped aside to let a large family pass, sharing a bag of hot chestnuts that she envied greatly, and slid herself into the space between two tents. She doubled back quickly, counting canvases until she came up to the heavy sailcloth, treated with tar and polish, which belonged to the printer's hut. Someone, Thornberry, she assumed, had already slit the seam of the tent, carefully at one corner all the way down. It was only noticeable with a heavy breeze and hopefully would not catch the eye of the diligent watchman who had sent Thomas the driver packing. Neame curled her fingers around the sailcloth and eased it aside, slipping into the musty darkness. The damp air smelled like metal and paper. The flap fell closed behind her, leaving them in darkness. "Be still," Thornberry hissed. "Make a light." Silently, Neame cast a small glowing lantern into her palm. One of the first charms she had learned at her mamma's knee. It looked like the head of a dandelion, with thousands of white pinpricks glowing over her skin. It always came out that way, even when she tried to form fancier lantern charms. It was bright enough to reveal Mr. Thornberry, frozen in the centre of the room, his hands outstretched and still. As her eyes adjusted to the light, Neame saw the scene more deeply. He held dozens of fine strands of magic in place, spiralling outwards. She had learned to see through the eyes of a spellcracker when they worked together at Henry's country estate, during the events of last season. In truth, this had always been a skill she worked at. When your mother was a Seaborn, and thus one of the most powerful and skilled enchantresses in the Teacup Isles, you learned to spot traps. There were traps here. Neame watched them unfold before her eyes. They were all ensnared in Thornberry's web, but still poised and ready to fall upon his head. "I only saw the one at first," he said between gritted teeth. "A hairline hex, easy to pluck away, and another beneath it. I thought that was all. Stay back, whatever you do. Stay in contact with the wall of the tent." Thornberry dissolved one hex and caught the next, working slowly backwards. It was a triple cavalcade, Neame realised. He had cracked one security spell and set off three more, which in turn sparked three more each. "Why would a printer have this breadth of magical protection?" she wondered aloud. The spell was twice as complex as anything she'd seen at the private houses of the highest aristocracy. "Fenchurch wasn't just a printer," said Thornberry. Snap, snap, snap. One by one he separated the threads of the hex and destroyed them, while holding all the others in place. He was sweating. Chalk sigils appeared on the floor, forming a circle that encompassed Thornberry and the printing press. He began erasing them, one by one, with whispered words. Each seemed to cause him a jolt of pain. "Wasn't," Neame repeated. There was a dark, odd shadow sticking out from beneath the printing press. A shadow with arms and legs. "Oh, gods, is that a body? Is that Mr. Fenchurch?" "No," said Thornberry, in a flat sort of voice. "It's not." There was a sizzling sound, as a thread of the spell trap flicked free of his control, running across the pleated ceiling. He caught it with a strand of magic from his little finger, and groaned with the effort. "This is an Arachne, Master Hex," he told her. "Royal security level. and like a fool, I thought I could handle disarming it because I know all the passwords. Nim blinked. That was a lot of information. Not all of it made sense yet. But you don't, in fact, know all the passwords? Apparently not, he said, and for a moment his eyes met hers. He was breathing heavily. I'm sorry, Nim. What's that supposed to? She started to say, but the remaining chalk sigils burst into flame. Thornbury let out a short breath, and the threads of magic around him snapped all at once. The ice cracked under his feet and then disappeared entirely, dropping Mr. Thornbury, the printing press, and the unnamed corpse directly into the freezing waters of the River Scamander. Thank you for listening to Sheep Might Fly. You can sign up to my author newsletter for updates. Follow me on Twitter at TansyRR or at Sheep Might Fly. Find me on Facebook at TansyRR Books. And if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of cool rewards, early ebooks, and exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge. See you next week.